Earl said on that day in 1972, if you will spend one extra hour every day studying your chosen field, in 5 years or less, you'll be a national expert in that field. Harry, that hit me like an oncoming train.
Welcome to Sales Made Easy, a podcast for business and personal growth. Join Harry Spate as he hosts sales experts and business owners who share their journeys of personal growth and business success. Now, here's your host, Harry.
Becoming a professional expert. Have you given that much thought lately? Well, I am sure you will today after you listen to my guest, Jim Cathcart, who is a certified professional speaker. He is an author who has done it all. He has delivered, just get this, over 3,500 convention speeches. He's written 26 books. He's traveled around the world. He's a musician, loves to sing about stuff that us baby boomers love, from the days of Elvis to the Beatles. He is a university MBA professor. He's a top 1% TEDx speaker. He's known in China. I mean, come on. And he is a guest on the Sales Made Easy podcast. Jim Cathcart,
Yay.
Welcome to the show. The crowd goes wild.
There you go. I have finally arrived, by golly.
Forget all those other, all that other recognition. You're on Sales Made Easy. Does it get any better?
I can't imagine how.
Oh, so good. You and I were just chatting. I'm so grateful for a friend. I'll give a shout out, Ron Frost. I mentioned you recently, and I said, that guy, I've got to get on the podcast. So you're so gracious with that LinkedIn intro to say yes to this stranger. And I'm super honored that you're here. So talk to me. I was watching your TEDx talk, and you mentioned something about hearing a voice in another room that happened to be the voice of Earl Nightingale, of all people. So how did that change your life?
1972, Little Rock, Arkansas. I was, 26 years old, and I was a clerk at the housing authority making $525 a month. Struggling, obviously. You know, I'm a kid newly married with a baby at home, and my wife's making $400 a month as a secretary, actually as a Kelly girl, which was a temp agency, right? And I was making $525, and we were just squeaking by. And I had no college degree. I'd never been an athlete or an academic scholar or anything like that. I didn't know anybody with money. My dad was a telephone repairman. Mom was a homemaker. We had never been around people who were successful. And so I had no concept of what it meant, what it was like to be a achiever in the world. And I was sitting there wondering what I was going to do when I grew up, you know? What do I want to do for a living? Because I was assistant to a guy who wasn't busy, a guy named Bob Moore. He had like 7 hours a day free time, and I was his helper. So I'm sitting there with 8 hours a day of free time, and I'm thinking, what do I want to do when I grow up? And I hear this voice in the next room on the radio, and it's, as you mentioned, Earl Nightingale, the dean of personal motivation, who was on 900 stations all over the world at that time. This was way, way before the Tony Robbins and folks like that came around. Even Zig Ziglar was unknown at that time. Wow. And Earl said on that day in 1972, if you will spend one extra hour every day studying your chosen field, in 5 years or less, you'll be a national expert in that field. Harry, that hit me like an oncoming train. I said, wait a minute. That's actually true. An hour a day, 5 days a week, 50 weeks a year, 5 years, that's 1,250 hours on one subject. Yeah. I mean, even I could become an expert on a subject doing that if the subject was narrow enough. If I was studying something like management? No, I would just be knowledgeable about management. But managing teams in crisis situations in the tropics, okay. 1,250 hours on that, you bet. I'd be the world's leading authority on it in 5 years, right? So I'm thinking, okay, now what do I want to be an expert at? Well, it's not urban renewal. I don't know. And I kept thinking, and finally, a couple of weeks later, I guess, it hit me. I want to do what he does. You know, I want to be like Harry. I want to be the guy on the radio. And then I thought, I don't know what that means. I have no clue what that's like. But Earl Nightingale inspired me, and I wanted to be like Earl Nightingale. So I decided I'll take him at his word, and I'll become a fanatical, emphasis on that word, student of human development. Mm. And I did. I started spending an hour every day, sometimes 2 hours, on weekends, 3, 4, 5 hours, studying anything I could get my hands on human development. I got all the classic books, Think and Grow Rich, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Power of Positive Thinking, As a Man Thinketh, The Science of Getting Rich, you know, all the famous books that we've come to know in recent years. I got all those books and read them cover to cover. In some cases, reread them. I got a recording of The Strangest Secret on a big old disc record of Earl Nightingale. Listened to it again and again. Bought Earl Nightingale's audio cassettes. Remember, this was 1970s. And I'll show you.
All right. So we're talking cassettes, not 8-tracks.
Yeah, cassettes.
All right, there they are.
And this is one of the cassette packs out of the Earl Nightingale library of 36 such cassette packs that I bought for $560.
Wow.
Today, that'd be like $3,500 adjusted.
That's like a month's pay for you back then. You were making that was a month's pay, right?
That was a scary, scary expenditure to my wife because she said, Jim, we can't afford this. I said, I know, but I got the whole library of cassettes on loan for a month. So I'm going to listen and learn everything that's in it and then give it back. And so the guy who had loaned it to me on preview, he said, listen to it for a month. And then and at the end of the month, if you want to keep it, figure out how to pay for it. If not, give it back. So I'm every day and I'm listening to those cassettes. And I'm listening when I'm grilling hamburgers on the grill. I'm listening while I'm washing the car. I'm listening everywhere I go. And anything I do, I've got that cassette player, little portable thing with batteries that I was playing until the batteries would run out about once every 2 weeks. Mm. And I'd have to replace them and listen again and listen again. And I became a different person. When I say fanatical, I'm talking severely fanatical. And like the textbook clinical, this guy needs treatment version of fanatical. And my life started changing. Mm. I mean, I was not only getting inspired, I was learning. So I learned how to set goals. I learned how to organize my time. I learned how to set priorities, how to get along better with people that weren't like me or disagreed with me, how to make sales, how to develop a plan, how to inspire people, how to motivate myself, you know, all these things. And my every day, you know, my mind is just stretching to embrace all this new information and it starts showing up on the job. So I got a promotion. They moved me from the field office where I was bored to the main office of the Housing Authority and made me the assistant to the board of directors. Whoa. And then my fellow employees elected me president of the Employees Association. I said, what? When was the election? They said, yesterday. And I said, I didn't know there was a meeting. I didn't even know there was an association. They said, yeah, we know. Ha, 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 you're the president. They thought it was a joke. And I said, well, okay, what do presidents do? And so I started taking it seriously and I went and met with the executive director and I said, I'm the new president of the Employees Association. Here's what the people say they're interested in. What do you need them to know from you? And that got me another raise and a bonus. And then I left the housing authority and I became a full-time salesperson selling Earl Nightingale's cassettes door to door in Little Rock, Arkansas. Now, this was 1974, started in 72, 2 years later, by 74, I'm selling Earl Nightingale's tapes door to door and to businesses. And I joined the Junior Chamber of Commerce, the JCs. And I joined in order to form a chapter in my neighborhood. The purpose of JCs was leadership training. And the way they did it was by doing projects, charitable projects in the community. I went to 400 JCs meetings in 2 years.
Oh my goodness.
After work and on weekends and holidays for free. 400 in 2 years. So let's revisit the earlier word, fanatic. Okay, but here's what happened. My life went from like this to like this.
Yeah, rocket ship.
And yeah, and my whole world transformed. The friends that hung out with me before said, you know, that's a little much. And so they kind of drifted away and new friends came around and we all collaborated and helped each other grow. And by 1970, I was full-time selling all the, no, 75. I was selling these Nightingale programs, and I got a call from the headquarters of the Junior Chamber of Commerce, JCs, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And at that time, the JCs had 356,000 members. Mm. It was the peak of the baby boom, and that was their market.
Yeah.
And they had 100 employees in Tulsa at their national headquarters, and they hired me to be senior program manager in charge of leadership training for all 350,000 members.
Wow.
Now think of this. I heard Earl on the radio in 72. I started selling his recordings in 74. I got a position as national expert in charge of leadership training in 1975. And in 1977, I went off into business for myself and never looked back. That's
incredible.
All I've done since 1974.
Incredible. Did you have, so two questions come to mind.
Number
one is, what was like the first thing that you recognized through the reading of this motivation and self-help, if we could call it that? What was the first thing you recognized about yourself? And then the second thing is, how did you have to deal with any self-doubt when you got into that type of role?
Yep. Well, the first thing I learned was from Earl Nightingale. He made it very clear to me that if you want to succeed, you need to become the kind of person who would. Mm. I was not.
Oh.
I had never aspired to bigger things. I had been an average student in school. I hadn't aced an IQ test or SAT or anything indicating high intellect. I was not known as an achiever. I was just a good guy, and I figured I'd have an ordinary life and die at the statistical age of my gene pool, right? So I figured I'll get a middle management job somewhere and retire at 65 and die at whatever. And then I heard the recording, and then I started really, really studying, immersing myself in that learning. And what I got, the impression I got was, Jim, if you will acquire the qualities of a person who would be considered an expert and his advice sought after, then the rest of the things you want, as they say in the Bible, will be added unto you. You know, seek you first the heaven, the kingdom, and all the rest will be added unto you. Well, that's kind of the principle here. If you decide, okay, I want to be one of the leading, I don't know, engineers in the world. Well, let's study leading engineers and find out what are they like that's different from all the other engineers. Because there are millions of engineers, many, many thousands of engineers in the world, right? What about the leading ones? What makes them different? So I wanted to be an expert in human development, but I didn't know anything. Mm. And I used to joke, I said, I wanted to be a professional speaker, but I'd never given a speech. And I had nothing to say. You know, that'll keep your fees low. So first thing I had to do was figure out, what qualities do I need? Well, I need to cultivate optimism. You know, people say, I'm not an optimist, I'm not a pessimist, I'm a realist, which is a pessimist that lies about it. The optimism is just a worldview that says, somewhere, somehow, under some circumstances, almost anything's possible. Pessimist worldview is, look at all the limitations in the world, they're probably permanent. Why knock myself out? I'm going to give up. Right. And the one that says I'm a realist says the pessimist is right and I can prove it. You know, so I decided to cultivate an optimistic worldview. And I did that through listening to the recordings and of reading all these things and hanging around people with a more healthier, expansive worldview. Yeah. Second thing, I need to get control of my own life. So I quit smoking after 13 years, quit cold, gave away my engraved lighters to strangers so I wouldn't get them back.
Yeah.
Told my whole world, we're out of the smoking business at my house. We don't have ashtrays. I'll stand outside with you while you smoke, but we're not going to do the indoor thing anymore. And some of my friends said, well, this was 1974. They said, well, if I can't smoke at your house, then I'm not coming over.
Yeah.
Understood. Your cigarette's more important than I am to you. So see ya. And so I it took me 3 months to withdraw, but I did. And I never smoked since, and I never will. Mm. Then I had to get in shape. I lost 52 pounds of fat and became a jogger and exercised. And wow, that changed my world. And then I just, everything I did, I was learning better how to communicate, how to be angry and not mess up all my relationships because I'm angry, how to be happy and spread the joy tactfully and appropriately, you know, instead of looking silly. I learned all kinds of things, listening skills, stress management skills, how to organize a meeting, how to run a meeting, how to lead and motivate other people when you didn't have money to dangle in front of them, how to get myself to do what needs to be done when I don't feel like it yet and still do a good job of it, how to be responsible, how to build a reputation as being a true professional. And as I did all those things, everything I dreamed of started coming true. Mm-hmm. And Harry, as you said, I've been all over the world. I did 20 lecture tours of mainland China, 25 major cities, speaking to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Chinese business people for 6 hours a day through an interpreter. And the most recent of those was in January of this year.
How in the world did you get into that country and start doing that? It's got to be, yeah, tell me, what's the story?
This is proof of my concept. I had done all these things to become the kind of person that I dreamed of being. I had gotten nominated to be on the board of directors of the National Speakers Association, which is about 3,000 or 4,000 professional speakers and authors. I rose through the ranks and became the president of that group. Then I received all the awards they give, the Professional Speakers Hall of Fame, the Certified Speaking Professional designation, the Cavett Award, which is the name for the founder of the group, which is that statue over there in the corner with my mm-hmm. cowboy hat above it. The Toastmasters International called me, and I wasn't even a member. And they gave me their Golden Gavel Award, which they had previously given to Earl Nightingale,
nice.
Walter Cronkite, Zig yep. Ziglar. I mean,
I've heard of those people.
And so,
and Jim Cathcart.
Yeah.
But him on top.
It was amazing. So all of this happened. And then in 2014 or 2015, I was at the Speakers Convention in San Diego. And a colleague of mine came up, Roger Dawson. He had with him a Chinese man, Dr. David Chu. And he introduced us. And Dr. Chu said, Jim, I've been following you for about 5 years. Mm. He said, I run a boutique speakers bureau in China called World's Masters. And I have Mark Victor Hansen, co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul with Jack Canfield. I have Tom Hopkins, sales trainer. I have Jay Abraham, marketing strategist. I have Roger Dawson, negotiations. John Gray, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. I have Bob Proctor. And he said, and I have an opening for you. I said, he said, and I have Brian Tracy. I said, I don't think I fit into that group. He said, oh, you definitely fit in that group. He said, I'm going to position you as the world's leading speaking trainer. And I said, what is a speaking trainer? He said, I don't know, but you're one of the best speakers I've ever seen. He said, it was going to be when I realized I had one opening, I was either going to ask Zig Ziglar or you. And Zig has gotten old enough that he doesn't want to travel internationally anymore. So it's you. I said, holy smokes. I said, well, if you believe that much in me, then I'm in.
Yeah.
And so now I've done 20 tours over there and, you know, all those major cities and everything. And they've got 4 books in Chinese. You know, wow. When I think of the things I've done, you know, I've been in the White House. And alone with the President of the United States in the Oval Office. I've spoken at the United Nations. I've been on stage at the Grand Ole Opry during a show. I mean, it just goes on and on. Wow.
And you were a government worker.
I was a clerk. I wasn't even a worker. I was an assistant to a worker.
And you listen to Earl Nightingale and Look Out World.
Things yeah. Change. Now here's a big question. It's that, you know, so people say, well, Jim, I'm thinking about bringing you in as an advisor for our company or hiring you as my mentor, you know, retaining you to be my mentor and help me grow my career. Or I'm thinking about you as the keynote speaker for our big, important annual meeting. The first question they ought to be asking themselves is, who is this guy really? I mean, he might have something good to say, but anybody could do that. I could give someone a book, say, memorize this and deliver it beautifully. So I could hire an actor. But who is this guy really? Is he what he says he is? Well, by their fruits, you shall know them, right?
Yeah.
So you want to know who somebody is? Check their track record. How long were they in prison? For me, that'd be not at all, except as a trainer teaching inmates during the JC's days. And I don't care to repeat that experience. That was scary enough just being a guest. But also, you know, you look at their reputation online. What are their peers? What are their former clients? What are their colleagues, their neighbors, their friends, the fellow church members, the members of their social group? What do those people think of them? And how long has their reputation been good? And thankfully, I've been very intentional about being the person that deserves the reputation I want.
Yeah.
And then how did their kids turn out? Well, my son is the person I want to grow up to be.
Nice.
He's been an executive with Four Seasons Hotels for 26 years. He's the resort manager for Four Seasons Santa Barbara, the Four Seasons Biltmore, which is in being rebuilt and renovated. But 26 years with Four Seasons, and he's got 2 kids in their 20s, and they turned out well.
Yeah.
So that tells me that I got the right message early on and practiced it in the right ways. But I'm still, you know, I'm still a jerk sometimes, just not as much so as I used to be.
Well, it's so funny. I mean, what you just said, right? I love the self-deprecation, but when you think back in 1972, you're way overweight. I mean, you lost whatever, like a quarter of your weight.
Yeah, I
in
did.
That neighborhood, right?
Yep.
2 packs a day smoker, right? So you could have been long ago deceased.
That's a good point.
Right? I mean,
that's a very good point.
Yeah, because living that trajectory, I mean, your weight probably would have gone up, prone for a heart attack. You might not even be 50 and missed out on all the things that your son and your grandchildren are doing. So that's one aspect. So just the idea, it's hard to comprehend, is how many lives got impacted by your changing your outlook on life, right?
26 books and 3,500 convention speeches, there's no telling.
Yeah.
I mean, the echo effect of my transformation has been profound. And happily, I have not done all of this to aggrandize me, but rather to further the message and to reach more people. And that's allowed me to get the benefits that I would have been seeking if I'd been selfish.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that you talked about in your TEDx talk is like you believe that we're all here for a purpose.
Right.
Living a life of purpose. And I think this is a real challenge for people, is that they try to figure out what this is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that you didn't really know what your purpose was.
No.
You listen to something on the radio and then you go all in. Is it just because you went all in on something that's what your purpose was? Or
no, I don't think so. Like a friend of mine, a colleague, John Lynn, told me the other day, we had like a 6-hour conversation the day before. And he said, man, you were born for this. Mm. I said, really? What do you mean by that? He said, it just seems that your essence, I'm paraphrasing, but the nature of you is so ideally suited to the path you have chosen.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, but the earlier version of me wasn't. This was, I discovered this and I realized I just found my life's direction, my destiny, so to speak. But remember, when I found it, I wasn't qualified to receive it. So I had to become an eligible receiver. I had to get in shape. I had to get downfield and in the open if I was going to get the ball, right? And so it was a long path. But I told you about the Earl Nightingale experience, part one. Part one was I heard him on the radio, and then a couple of years later, I was selling his programs.
Right.
Here's part two.
Okay.
I moved to La Jolla, California, formed a partnership with a college professor there, Dr. Tony Alessandro, still my best friend today. And for 5 years, we were business partners and we were building our training business. And one day I was sitting in the office in La Jolla. The phone rang. It was Earl Nightingale asking to speak to me. Mm. I was speechless. I said, you know, and he said, Mr. Cathcart, I read an article of yours that would make a good audio training program. We publish those. I said, oh, believe me, sir, I know. And I said, and the article you read is an audio program that Tony Alessandro and I created. It was the first ever audio program on personality types. Mm-hmm. And it was called Relationship Strategies for Dealing with the Differences in People. So he said, well, send it to me. And if we like it, I'll publish it. So I sent it to him. He said, if you'll re-record it, we'll take it. Mm. So in 1984, Earl Nightingale's company, Nightingale Conant, published Relationship Strategies. And in the next 2 years, they sold $3.5 million worth worldwide.
Wow.
So consider, 72, I heard him on the radio. 74, I sold his cassettes. 84, he was selling mine.
Incredible.
Around the world. Yeah. In 1989, I was president of the National Speakers Association. I called Earl and I said, Mr. Nightingale, would you do me the honor of coming to our speakers convention and sitting on stage with me in front of 2,000 or 3,000 of your peers, and let me interview you about the history, the evolution of this field of self-development that we're all involved in. He said, I might, because it wasn't paid, you know, it was a freebie. Mm-hmm. He said, I'd like to, I might, if I don't have something else that conflicts. And I said, okay. So about May of that year, I got a call from Earl's wife, Diana, Jim, Diana Nightingale. Hey, Diana. She said, Jim, Earl passed away.
Oh.
I said, oh, man. She said, look, we're not going to have a funeral for Earl because we had a private ceremony. We scattered his ashes here at home. But I'd like to have a memorial for him at your speaker convention. I said, we would be absolutely honored. And so I said, yeah, it'll be in Dallas in July of 1989, where Earl would have spoken. And she said, I want you to speak. I said, no, I'm not worthy. This should be world leaders and captains of industry. Yeah. Earl's peers, not me. She said, no, Jim, you don't understand. You are what Earl Nightingale was trying to create. You're the product of what he was teaching because you took his message to heart, practiced it, and transformed your life and went on to inspire others.
Wow.
And so the only speakers at Earl Nightingale's memorial service in front of hundreds, if not thousands of his peers, including his own son in the audience, David Nightingale, was his widow Diana and me and a short video clip from Dennis Whately.
Incredible story. Got the chills.
What an honor.
Yeah, totally. What would
I get
you say?
Chill bumps thinking about that today.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard not to. I mean, when you said that he passed, I was thinking in 1989, I was going to ask, well, how old was he? And then when you said he passed, I went, just because I was thinking he didn't live a long life.
No, he didn't. As a young man, he was on board the USS Arizona when it was bombed in Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
He escaped alive from that. And went on to build his life and career. And I think he was in his early 70s,
yeah.
Maybe late 60s. I don't remember, but he was younger than I am now.
Yeah.
I'm 77.
Yeah, and you look great. And
thank
I'm
you.
I'm just saying that. You're obviously doing something right.
Yep.
So what was the big... All right, I got to ask this question. When you were thrown into these positions... How did you deal with the self-doubt?
Well, that's a part of your earlier question that I neglected to reply to. I had plenty of self-doubt, but I never doubted whether I would keep going. I just doubted whether what I was doing was going to work or whether I was really worthy. I had a young woman, an Olympic gymnast, in my audience one time for the American Heart Association special event. And she said, Mr. Cathcart, you know, we're just youth. How did you get to the position you're in? You know, how did you ever believe that you could do it? And I thought, jeepers, she's an Olympian and she's asking me? We should reverse roles. I said, it never occurred to me to quit. I mean, people, how do you know you're going to succeed? Because I'm not going to give up. Well, what if it's harder than you thought? Then it's harder. What if it costs more? Then it's more expensive. What if it takes longer? Then it takes longer. I'm not giving up. Well, what if you find another career? Probably won't. But if I do, I will. You know, it's just bring it. What else have you got, right?
So beautiful. Either I heard someone pretty famous recently say, there's two potential outcomes. You succeed or you quit.
That's right.
Right. And you nailed that one because you're just not giving up. And so tell us a little bit about your musical affection there with.
I will.
Yes.
But first, I've got to hitchhike on your last comment.
Okay.
My friend Les Brown is a famous motivational speaker.
I've heard of him.
And one of the things that he says that I just love is he says, it's not over until I win. Yeah, don't give up.
Right.
It's not over until I finally ultimately succeed,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, yep. That's music, a highlight right there.
I always loved music, but wasn't encouraged to play music. My mom and dad bought a used piano, and my sister took piano lessons. I didn't. But they bought a record player and got me Elvis and the Everly Brothers and Perry Como and whoever else was on the airways back in the day. And I listened to those records again and again and again and again and again and again and again as a youth. In college one day, my roommate, Dan Clanton, taught me how to play three chords on the guitar. And that kind of opened the door for me. And I became better and better self-taught at playing guitar to where I could play at parties and play occasionally in a beer joint or a nightclub. And then in 1969, I started doing it professionally. And so the year before I got married, I was playing in clubs. Wow. And then when I got married, I thought I needed a real job. Like that wasn't real. And so I went to work in a bank and then took a job selling mutual funds and a lot of other things, ended up finally in this career. But my love of music never went away. In 2000, maybe, I was at Sherwood Country Club, Thousand Oaks, California, is where our home was. I went to an event and a friend of mine, John Dwight, said, "Hey, Jim, you play guitar, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, get your guitar out of the closet and come over to the house. We're going to have a hot August night party." Neil Diamond, right? And I said, "Well, cool." So I grabbed my guitar and I got an old songbook of Neil Diamond songs and I started playing and practicing. And I went over to John's house and we had a good time. And I said, "Hey, next one's on me." And we had a guitar night at my house. And I brought lots of people and a bunch of guitars. And then I went to the country club and I said, "I want to host a guitar event." And so they put on a guitar night for the members of Sherwood Country Club. And I got Guitar Center Hollywood to donate for the evening about $100,000 worth of top-end guitars for people to try, you know, like a petting zoo of guitars with the potential of buying them. And we had 60 people show up and we did an open mic and my wife and son and I and a couple of friends did most of the songs, but others got up as well. And that led to me being hired by a nightclub, which led me into doing hundreds and hundreds of performances all over the world and recording an album and all that. So I love playing guitar and singing.
All right. And what's your favorite kind of music?
Baby boom music. Resume the boom. It's time to call the roll again. Resume the boom. I swear I'll never grow old again. Resume the boom. We still have a dream, sweetheart.
But I'm a huge fan of the baby. My
son, yep. I've written songs that have been recorded and are on Spotify.
Well, I'm going to find more of you. So for more of Jim Cathcart, I hate to end this conversation. This is good. Yeah, so good. But where can people find more of you, sir?
Well, they can find me pretty easily. Because if you just know the name Jim Cathcart, C-A-T-H-C-A-R-T, you can find me on almost all the social media out there, mostly Facebook, mostly LinkedIn, YouTube, but a presence on the others as well. But what I do is I train people to be professional experts. So if someone says, "I've got an expertise of X and I want to build a career around it," then I say, "Come with me and let's discover how much more successful you can be." So go to cathcart.com/experts and you can see a whole lengthy, long letter describing how that works. And if you want to become a certified professional expert, that's something that my company, my institute does. So just drop me an email, jim@cathcart.com, firstname@lastname.com.
That is fairly easy. Yep. So I'm on that website now. Make Jim your mentor. Earn your certified professional expert CPE. And click here to learn now. So I'll put that link in the show notes. This has been a real blast. I'm going to have my kids listen to this one.
Oh, thank you.
So good. So
thank you.
Thanks for the chills throughout this. This has been great.
Thank you. Well, I held back on the heavy stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll save that for next time.
Okay. I look forward to it. Well, send me a link to this so I can share it with all my friends.
All right. We'll be happy.
Happy to do it. And anybody that wants to reach out, please do so. I'm happy to send you a free copy of one of my books, like the book, What to Do When You're the Speaker. Yeah, as a matter of fact, they can go to free, F-R-E-E, .cathcart.com and just download it directly. Free.cathcart.com will get you a copy of What to Do When You're the Speaker. It won't put you on an endless mailing list or anything like that either. It's just a gift.
54 lessons on how to master the craft of professional presentations. I am getting that.
Dynamite.
All right.
All right. I will see you, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Sales Made Easy. If you found value in our conversations, please subscribe and leave a review. Our goal is to provide practical strategies for growing your business while staying true to your values. Remember, success in sales is about serving your clients. Serve first, and the selling will follow.